Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Learning Spaces. I am your host, Forrest Foster, Head of Access Services Information Commons at Winston-Salem State University. Today's show is titled Information Creation as a Process, the New IL Framework. The title is pretty much feeling based off of one of the thresholds, of course, by not only the creation of it, but by also the way that it's being shared, for instance, the show today. Very different from the ways it's being distributed, and we just felt that this was a good way, a live way to distribute the information and share it with others as well. Today we have special guests Trudy Jacobson and Craig Gibson, co-chair of the ACRL Task Force Committee that led the charge in managing the transition from standards to framework. Today we'll be discussing the creation, the content, and some of the controversies over the framework. If guests want to call in, you can call in at 347-945-5190. That's 347-945-5190. However, if you feel the need to call or free to call, please, we ask that you call in for this particular show around 11:55. We want to get some questions in the air first before we receive any phone calls, if we receive any phone calls. So Trudy and Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. As I said before, I thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and just talking with the community about the new framework, which has created a lot of discussion. However, the opinions may go. I do want to say that you guys have placed yourself in history of librarianship. I just want to know, how do you feel about that, how being the focal point in all of this creation and moving forward? How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I think it's been exciting and interesting and stimulating. And I think we would agree that it's stimulated a lot of really good conversation that continues about information literacy and how we have started rethinking it.
Right. Hold on one second. We do have a caller, and I know we said 11:55, but let me see what the question is, and maybe we can write it down. Hello, caller. How are you? Caller? Okay. Well, that happens sometimes. Well, the document in itself, it has a lot of influence. The impact that it's had. Can you talk about that a little bit briefly? When you were starting out as a task force, or being actually coming to the task force, or being asked into the task force, look at hindsight, and then I'm sure, we're still in the midst of things, but the impact that it's had. Did you envision this impact and the dialogue it would create and being in the task force? Did you ever envision that?
I think some of it exceeded our expectations.
When
we started, we didn't really, we didn't know where exactly we were heading. So I think we were, as we went along, we were sort of seeing what was needed. Then we saw people's reactions. So I think it was very much a sort of organic process but I don't think we truly envisioned at the very beginning what it was going to become, both the document and the sort of the engagement with it, the really high level of engagement.
Right. And I think the community out there helped us with the feedback that we got, helped us create it. And I think that's what Trudy was talking about, in that it was an organic process.
Right. I mean, I just find it kind of amazing that, like, for the past 4 months, you know, particularly the task force has created, you guys are like the stimulus for creating a lot of discourse and written documentary out there. I just find that amazing. Like, moving forward, people will be, I guess, gaining tenure off of your creation of this dialogue. And, I mean, if you look at it in that sense, it's kind of amazing that, you know, people will be writing about this and trying to obtain tenure and writing proposals and new proposals for different conferences and workshops. I just find that amazing. So, I mean, I don't know if you've stepped back from it or if you're able to step back from it now and to visualize that, but I think that's awesome. But I guess moving forward, I mean, going into the task force, what was kind of the impetus behind it as far as the task force? How was it created? I mean, some of the, you know, people involved in naming individuals, would be the first question.
This task force actually followed on a previous task force. So standards at ACRL do go through a regular revision process. And the previous task force was constituted to sort of determine what should happen with the standards. Should they be revised? Should they be left alone? Should they be rescinded? And it was that task force that was chaired by Elisa Stern-Cahoy of Penn State, where the recommendation came through that they really needed radical revision. And that was the group that brought up the idea of the affective factors, like dispositions. They mentioned the AASL standards for the 21st century learner, and metaliteracy. So this task force followed from that one, based on their recommendation. And ACRL actually, let Craig talk about how the task force was assembled.
Okay.
Well, we got names suggested for us from ACRL, from the ACRL past president, because that's a way that ACRL usually sets up important groups or task forces. But Trudy and I also knew some people, so it was sort of who were really good at thinking about information literacy. So that's basically how it was assembled. It was a combination of our own ideas as well as the names that came from ACRL.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Let's see if we can try to chime him in, even though I said a little later. Let's see if we can get the question down. Hello, caller. How are you? What is your question? Caller? Okay, well, we're having, I guess another one didn't want to say anything. We haven't had issues in the past, so we'll see what happens next time. Okay, I know we talked about previously, the three of us, certain, you know, things about the task force and the process. How much control did the task force have in making decisions about the framework? I know that's kind of been an important question.
Well, it was, the task force consulted with the ACRL board at several points as we were doing our work. They gave us the go-ahead. So really it was the work of the task force in conjunction with the feedback that we were getting. And when all was said and done, we had about 1,000 pages of feedback. We were collecting it in all sorts of ways. It was from social media, the forums that came through. So what our role was to sort of use our best judgment on it, because very often the feedback was diametrically opposed on the same issues. And so, you know, there was no way we could listen to everybody because everybody had very different opinions. But there wasn't, there wasn't like oversight from ACRL. I mean, there was oversight, but there wasn't sort of, they weren't really telling us what to do. They figured that they had a bunch of information literacy experts on the task force and that we should get to it.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Let me try to chime them in one more time. They want to keep keep trying. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. Caller? Okay, well. We'll keep moving on. What I find was important is that I think a lot of people didn't know that you guys offer the opportunity for feedback. Because I think a lot of people in certain areas of certain discussions and dialogue has been talked about it. I think it was important to know and inform people that there was an opportunity for feedback. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we use surveys. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Craig.
We use survey forms, and we had online forums throughout the whole process, and we invited feedback that way. And so we did collect all of the feedback and analyzed it extensively. So I think everybody told us all along the way that we were using a very transparent and open process to gather feedback.
Okay. No mention. I want to step back a couple of questions. I think I was kind of interrupted by train of thought from one of the callers, but I think, Trudy, you mentioned that there needed to be a radical change. I mean, why radical? Why so radical? Was it just time for something drastically new from the standards to the framework? Or, I mean, why the use of the radical change?
Well, a lot of it has to do with how the information environment has changed.
Right.
And Craig and I sort of talked about the questions, and so this was actually one that he was going to take. So, Craig, do you want to do this one?
Well, the selection of the question about why we selected threshold concepts, we did early on consider a number of different models, but there had already been some really good work and thinking done by some individuals in our field who had focused on threshold concepts as a good way to engage students and learning about the information environment in a more engaging way, also to move beyond skills and to start focusing on concepts or the big ideas that tie together and that provide more integrative learning. And so we thought that was a really good way of approaching this and to not provide such an elaborate list of skills or competencies, but to focus on a cluster of really major ideas that could help organize instruction, information learning, teaching and learning practices. So that's why it was such a radical change.
And we'll get
that
to
was our rationale.
Okay, and we'll get in a little bit more detail in that in a few minutes. So let's kind of take it bit by bit here. I guess in terms of creating the document, was there any other discussions with other national agencies, IE, AACU, or about the framework and the changes that you were going to make, or was it just this is what we needed to do and we're going to go this route, or was there any other discussions with other agencies?
Well, there was a list of a lot of other stakeholders that was compiled early in the process. We were lucky to have a program officer assigned to us early on, Kate Gansky, and she worked with ACRL staff to compile this list of stakeholders. So they were kept informed all along the way. And I also know that there were discussions with AACU by ACRL staff about here's the direction the task force is going. We're going to keep you up to date. There are implications here for the work that ACRL has already done with AACU. So there was definitely a process of keeping people informed and posted about where we were going.
Right. Was there any talk of they would go that route too as far as changing or amending their document?
Well, I think there was always some consideration that there would be implications for them, as well as a lot of groups within ACRL, some of the discipline-specific sections, that they would be modifying some of the work around standards that they'd already done.
Right, correct. Okay. Callers, we're trying to wait till 11:55, if you can hold off another, I guess, 10 more minutes. Again, the phone number is 347-945-5190. That's 347-945-5190. And we are also receiving tweets if need be, or send out a tweet at hashtag ACRL framework, and that's hashtag ACRL framework. Last question in regards to the task force. I guess, you know, bringing different individuals and thoughts and minds together, was there any type of opposition in the chambers, in the meeting around the new radical change? Were there some people still hanging on to the old standards, or was everybody in unanimous decision to move forward with the new framework? Can you touch on that a little bit if you could?
Trudy, would you like to address this one? I've been answering several.
Sure. It was a process. So it took some time as we were thinking through different ideas. Now, the previous task force also did an enormous literature review, and so they had done a lot of that. But, this group was sort of feeling its way, and so different ideas were surfacing at different times, but, I think we coalesced around this idea pretty early on, and a lot depended on people's backgrounds and sort of what they knew, and as people learned more, there really wasn't, a lot of opposition. It was more questions about it, and through those questions, I think all of us learned a lot more. So, we had checkpoints at different parts of the process as to were people comfortable with things. We had gradient of agreement exercises. So there definitely was unified agreement for change. And then I think for the framework too, we were really careful to check in, and it was very collegial type of group. So everybody was bringing different things to it that helped all of us sort of come to the conclusions that we did.
And I think it got better, all the way through. We kept refining. We had draft after draft, and because of the work that we were able to do, and having some of the debates that we did around language and about the structure, I think what we ended up with was really quite good.
Yeah, I think so too. We kind of touched briefly on the change from standards to frameworks. But there seemed to be, as a whole, people questioned why the omitting or the sunsetting of the old standards completely. I know a lot of individuals were wondering why not have some type of tie or conduit between the old standards and the new framework. Can you touch on that briefly?
Well, I think we believe the framework was something very, very different and a very different approach. And we actually talked at one point in the task force about mapping and providing, a detail. We tried some little experiments with that, and we saw that it really didn't work that well, and that we really believe that we were creating a different kind of document that would just provide different touchstones for learning in a different way. So that's why we didn't try to combine standards as we've known them in the past for information literacy with the document we were creating.
Yeah. You said you tried to tie, or there were some.
Well, we tried. There were some. We looked at some possibilities for mapping, in a fairly detailed way, and we just saw that it really didn't work that well.
All right. In the new document, it seems to be a lot of, and not to say that the old standards didn't have this in it, but it seems to be more of a, a implementation or a push for more of a holistic learning. I know a lot of the, not really those, these words are in the document, but just more of a collaboration self-assessment feel and meta-literacy feel to it. I guess why now the threshold concepts? I mean, why now? Why introduce the threshold concepts now?
Well, we thought the time was ripe, but threshold concepts have been developed in other disciplines, and this has, you know, been going on for about 10 plus years in a variety of disciplines, and we thought that it would provide a really good way to start conversations with faculty and to help them, you know, even if they're not using the term threshold concept, to really take a good look at what are the foundational ideas and their disciplines. And we in the library field are also doing this in our field now with threshold concepts. So we thought it would provide really good collaborative opportunities with faculty.
Yeah, and some people would say to that, though, some people would say, why is such a large venue, though? Why introduce it as such a large point or a key point in this point in time? Could there have been a gradual process in introducing it, or, you know, but why at this time? Why a large, I guess, with so much at stake, with some people would question that. I mean, could have been another way to do it, maybe? I mean, I don't know. Is there a way to gradually introduce threshold concepts, or is it just introduce it and let the community run with it and see what comes up? Was that more of the motto?
Well, it was really interesting. As we were working on this, people kept coming to us and saying, we're already doing this. You know, this is something that, you know, we've shifted our instruction. We've actually stopped using the standards ages ago. So thank you for sort of validating, you know, the kind of thing
right.
that they needed it.
Right.
But for the thing that we've been doing. And so, you know, we've been hearing an enormous amount of excitement about this. So and because the, you know, standards really only go through a review process, you know, every 7 years or something, you know, it's not like it would be something that you could turn around and do next year. So it definitely seemed like a really good time for it. You know, the standards had served well for a while, but it was 15 years old.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of concern about the affective issues and, you know, learners as information producers and not just users of information.
Right.
There was just so much swirling around. This just did seem to be the right time.
Hold on one second. Let's see what we have. For those that are calling in, we try to ask that you wait till 11:55. You can email me at FosterFC at WSSU.edu. That's FosterFC at WSSU.edu. Since we're on thresholds, can we just briefly for those that are maybe out here first-time listeners and new to the threshold concepts, can you just inform them on what exactly are the threshold concepts and the whole ideology behind them?
Are you asking threshold concepts for information literacy in particular?
Yes, the ones we identified.
Well, there are six of them, and these are the core ideas that we identified from an earlier and modified in some cases from an earlier Delphi study. And these are core ideas like scholarship as a conversation, research as inquiry, authority as constructed and contextual, that help to tie together smaller ideas or skills or competencies. The whole idea underlying threshold concepts is that there are foundational ideas in any field, including ours, that are difficult to grasp, but that once the student gets them, they are able to understand many other parts of the field or many other parts of the discipline. So our premise in moving forward with these and identifying these six pretty much cover the whole area of the information landscape, the information literacy, and, you know, the way that students need to move around in this landscape. Once they get these, they really will be a lot more agile and adept and proficient. But they are not easy to grasp initially, and so we've helped the way we describe them is that they are beginning. These are beginners understand these at a fairly rudimentary level, and then they have to move beyond to really understand what scholarship as a conversation is. And we need to introduce them to these through various types of teaching practices and various types of assignments.
The document kind of being abstract in some areas, was that kind of an intended purpose, or I know a lot of people talk about the document as being kind of vague and being not really, well, of course, for one, because of the standards and some of the learning outcomes not being there, but in going into that, was there, I guess it kind of ties into what you said earlier, but just to ask it anyway. Why the let go of the omission of the learning outcomes? Was that just part of the old document and just do away with that, or was there more of a thought in that the community needed to create their own for their specific university or specific culture?
Yes, that was exactly it, Forrest, because there's a lot of concern about the idea of one size fits all, and what would work for perhaps a two-year school might not work for the, you know, upper-level students at a research university. So the feeling was that it was very important for this to work well for all different institution types, programs, that these learning outcomes be identified at the individual institutions. Now, that's not to say that groups of like schools or programs might not, work together or learn from each other and come up with ones that, work for all those institutions. But one thing that we did hear from people and we were listening to quite carefully was, you know, the concern that, will this work for a two-year institution or a four-year liberal arts? You know, there was concern that it might be mostly for research universities. So there was a lot of thought that went into that.
So I guess within that answer, rubrics and assessments, does that follow the same pattern? Because I don't want to be redundant here, but that kind of seems like it falls into the same pattern.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. As far as the feedback you got from that, how was the how well did you take that? I mean, I know there was a lot of emphasis on rubrics and assessment in regards to some of the library community and their feedback and their in their opinion of the feedback. I mean, how did you all take that after the fact? Was it something that you still feel confident about, or is it something that you still made the right decision in, or that you would retract it, or maybe go back and try to add some things?
Well, Megan Oakleaf has put out a document that I think is really very helpful and practical as to how to do it. But as you were saying before, you know, the assessment really depends upon the local situation and what it is you're doing. So I think we felt very comfortable with that.
Okay. Hold on one second here. Okay. Again, callers, you are now able to call if you want to call. 347-945-5190. That's 347-945-5190. And it's another specific part I like to talk about, I guess, the knowledge practices and dispositions. I guess that goes back to some of the language in the document. This might have been stated earlier with some of the doing away with the new and moving forward with the old. But the use of those particular phrases and the terms, was that something originally created, or was that something like I think someone mentioned from an earlier document that was originally created, or was that something newer, I guess I should say?
Well, that's yes and no. Knowledge practices is probably a newer term. We decided we would use that one rather than competencies or skills because we wanted to suggest the idea that there's a knowledge creation process that students are part of, and this is not just information skills at a more basic level that we're trying to raise the bar and have students, you know, and faculty and librarians work together and helping students understand that information is part of knowledge. And so we wanted to raise the bar there and just thinking about, looking beyond competencies or skills. Dispositions actually are, getting back to what Trudy had talked about earlier, we thought that we really did need to address the affective domain or the values domain or the attitudinal domain because that's so important in learning. Learning is not just purely a cognitive process. And so we see knowledge practices and dispositions as complementing each other. Right. And that's why we're using those two sets for those two categories and in the framework. We believe that the students can behave, you know, these are examples only. Each institution can develop and actually create learning outcomes from those, even though they're not learning outcomes as such.
Right.
But
yeah, because
we
if you look at the document, they're written similarly like outcomes.
Learning outcomes, but they have to be, they'll have to, just as with the old standards in a way, the learning outcomes there, which look more like, which really are more learning outcomes, always had to be written in an appropriate way at the local level.
Right.
But we decided to create some new terms that really do, although again, disposition, it's not really a new term. We decided to include that to address the affective aspect of learning.
Okay. All right. So, and again, I kind of asked at the beginning, but just to rewind this up and to bring it back to the, I guess, to the forefront. I mean, how's it on an introspective side? How does it feel to be at the forefront, though? I mean, how does it feel to the part of your community that's kind of like a filler and having an impact in information literacy and meta literacy and just the whole library community? How does it feel to have that impact?
Well, I think it's I feel really positive about it, but I've already talked about that a little bit, so Trudy may want to.
Yeah. And I think all the members of the task force, it was a hard 2-year process, and the members of the task force worked so incredibly hard. You know, sometimes there would be 2 meetings a week. So I think that, everybody felt that they really did the absolute best they could. You know, we listened to feedback. We made changes based on the feedback. One of our task force members she was on sabbatical, spent an enormous amount of time analyzing it. So, I think there was the feeling amongst all of us that, we had put something out there that's important, that was generating conversation, and that we think is, really going to help people, who'd like to move forward in this way.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. Were you all shocked in that? Did you saw some of the opposition, some of the rhetoric out there, in being that as you gathered some of this feedback and you heard some good things and you felt that you were going in the right direction, when you put it out there, did you feel that when you heard some of the feedback and the opposition, was that a shock to you? Was that more of a shock or was that or were you kind of expecting that?
Well, we thought there would be a lot of debate and conversation and discussion, and this is just a really big change. So I don't know if I don't know if we were really shocked, but I do know that over time we kept hearing some of the same issues and concerns, and we hoped that we were beginning to address them as the final draft of the framework evolved.
Okay. I do have one question from an email. Let's see. One question I have is whether we are expecting too much of the students to make it through the IL thresholds and the thresholds for their primary discipline. So if any one of you want to address that.
Yeah. Well, it's something that comes over time. So, this is where, we're saying essentially, the one-shots, they're not really what we need. So, working librarians and faculty members working together, trying to structure, a progression through this. I think that, you know, looking at the standards, I mean, trying to do all of that, you know, is really difficult too. Actually, I think this, in a way, might be a little bit easier, but depending upon the access one has to the students. And I think that collaboration is really important.
Right, right. All right, speaking of the one-shots, as you say, might not fit for the one-shots, what do you see the one-shots to be now? Is it just, should it be more of just an introduction to library services? In saying that, I mean, is that how you feel a one-shot should be now, or how do you see a one-shot?
I think the one-shot can serve as an entree to some of these ideas, but it really is only an entree than thinking about collaboration with a faculty member in a deeper way. And so the big idea, a big idea, can be introduced in a one-shot, and that can be built on with tutorials or with assignments and extended interactions with students afterward and with a faculty member. I mean, this it's always a developmental process, but the one-shot itself obviously can't cover everything, but the big idea can be introduced and a different kind of assignment or learning experience can be included in the
classroom.
One-shot. Yes,
right.
Flipped classroom. There are different models that would work with introducing, say, scholarship as a conversation in a one-shot session, but it will require revisiting that idea later on in the course or in other courses. That's where the coordination needs to come in with working with other faculty, with a whole department. You know, it should open up all kinds of additional conversations and collaboration.
Right.
And one thing I think with the one-shot, too, is that it's just a way of thinking about it a little bit differently. So you may be doing some of the same things you would have been doing before, but just talking about them or introducing them to students a little bit differently that goes along with one of the frames. So it may not mean radical revisions, just some tweaking as to how you introduce students to the topic.
Right, right. And this kind of goes into my next question, I guess. All right, so is this kind of what you're doing at your respective universities? Or can you talk about it? What are some of the things you're initiating, or what are some of the initiatives that you plan to do with this new framework?
Well, here at Ohio State, we are doing a faculty development workshop through the Center for Teaching and Learning for faculty. So we're approaching it from a faculty development perspective. We also have conversations going on in the library right now to bring because it's a big organization, just different groups, and to talk to different groups of librarians, the special collections librarians, and area studies librarians about what the implications are for using the framework. So we're approaching it internally and to get everybody to understand what the framework is, and then approaching it from the faculty development perspective in terms of doing a workshop for faculty about creating new kinds of assignments using the framework.
Okay.
Yeah, and at the University at Albany, we're doing a variety of things, you know, and it's even something as simple as the TV monitors in the lobby and the website. You know, we have these slides that introduce some of the concepts, you know, with some really catchy photos, you know, to catch students' attention. We're using it in one-shots. We have some credit courses, a few of those, so introducing it there. You know, one of the groups on campus that's been very receptive is the Writing and Critical Inquiry program. So it's a first-year writing and critical thinking class. But the names of the frames resonate, you know, with them and what they're teaching their students. So, you know, we're doing some direct outreach to faculty, as Craig mentioned. So it's a multifaceted approach.
All right. Final comments. If you had 30 seconds, or if you had 30 to 45 seconds, and you wanted to share what your final thoughts would be about the document, what would you say? If you're at a conference, which I'm sure you all, I think we talked about earlier, somebody's going to ACRL, and But in the future, I'm sure you'll be stopped and asked, and why this and why that, and what would be some of your final comments in regards to your approach and your thoughts on the framework?
Well, I think there's just all kinds of opportunities going forward for our librarians to collaborate with each other, collaborate across institutions, get ideas from each other, collaborate with faculty, with teaching and learning centers, work on a research agenda in the future, this kind of action research, you know, and investigating what students aren't getting, and then the framework as a response to that. So I think there's just many, many possibilities. So I'm really excited about what's already happening.
Trudy?
I would say sort of, you know, enjoy the process. I think that there's all sorts of interesting things that can be done with it, but it's nothing that has to be incredibly radical. So, you know, if you're more comfortable just sort of getting your toes wet first before diving in, do that. But, you know, looking at it and thinking about the things that we've been teaching, it just takes a bit of adaptation. But, you know, I'm finding that the students are reacting really well to it. And I often, like, I'll give them the list of dispositions people ask, you know, how do you teach those? And we talk about it, you know, and maybe it's only 5 or so minutes, but it opens up all sorts of new conversations with the students as well.
All right. And again, I don't, you know, this has been shared too out in many forums that the ACRL standards, I mean, they don't have to be adopted by everyone. I mean, it's not the law of the land per se. But I guess if you are a research institution, then you know you're kind to parallel with what ACRL is doing. But if you're not an ACRL type university, a research oriented university, then it might not be for you. There might be, you know, again, still the ACU or some other bodies out there, whatever part of you're part of, you might want to still tag along with the standards or methods that other people are using. Well, our time is pretty much up. We had a couple calls, but it seemed to did not come through, or they just didn't have the nerve to ask them, but we did get a couple emails or one or two emails, and thank you for those emails. Again, I appreciate your time for the show. I know you had other things to do, but I'm glad you were able to come out and share with us some insight within the task force. There's been a lot of dialogue and online and in person and through the internet, but I just feel like that it was important to hear it from the task force themselves for the individuals who kind of created some of the dialogue and helped transition from the old standards to the new. And I appreciate your time, and I'm sure the library community appreciates your time as well. So I just want to say thank you once again.
Thank you.
No problem at all. And I'm sure I will see you guys soon in some conference.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.